Save big money at Menards, where there's no ceiling to savings. Update your space with new ceiling tiles. Menards carries stylish and durable ceiling tile options. Armstrong ceiling tiles offer a variety of styles that are easy to install. Get the Brighton 2x2 ceiling tile for only $379 each. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, you'd never guess what the cat has dragged in now at this stage. I don't know, they do it to me every time. So back in the day, I don't know if it was News Talk Breakfast or whether it was The Hard Shoulder, but my next guest said that I was a certified psychopath, and he was able to say that with some authority, because he's a professor of psychiatry at TCD. He's a consultant psychiatrist at Tala University Hospital. He's written more books than you could shake a stick at in terms of all types of elements of psychiatric practice. And I haven't got into his Buddhist studies and so on. Professor Brendan Kelly, you're most welcome, and a happy new year to you too.
Happy new year to you. And once again, can I just put on record, I've never met anyone more delighted to declare himself to be a psychopath, which might I add, would mean you are lacking in empathy, lacking in interpersonal understanding, and leaving a trail of destruction in your wake, none of which I believe to be true.
And it's called F the Begrudger. Right. Well, now, what we're going to talk about today is New Year's resolutions, the new you, and how we should go about this whole sort of psychology of this. So first of all, are you a believer in New Year's resolutions?
Yes, well, more or less everybody is. It's hard to see the turning of the year as not being some kind of an event, some kind of an opportunity, some kind of moment to take stock and look at the current you and decide if it is even conceivable that there could be a better you.
So you're a fan of this. OK, tell me then the pitfalls of it, because if you know, the classic story of gym subscriptions, they rocket up. Either in terms of gifts, Christmas gifts, or New Year intentions. And you find come Valentine's Day, people have given up on the treadmill, given up on the new you there, and they actually feel worse. I think it's the third Monday of January is the bluest day of the year. Like, you're setting yourself up for disaster.
Well, Ivan, that's a very dysphoric view of the whole business. But we do have this odd baseline assumption that life is a self-improvement project and we should work on getting better and being better and so forth. And joining the gym in January is a very big part of that. The fact is, most of us do make resolutions, be they specific or vague. Most of us have failed in those resolutions by February, and less than 1% of us will have stuck with it by the end of the year. So, you know, it's not a great business. We do set ourselves up to fail, and mainly because we don't do it with, if you like, compassion and understanding for ourselves. We expect ourselves to achieve things 100% in a way that we would not expect of other people. We're less forgiving of ourselves. So we need to build in a little room, a little wiggle room in the resolutions to allow them not to work out, as they almost invariably will not work out.
Okay, so would you give us any advices in terms of to keep the goals modest, or to avoid some of the obvious pitfalls if you end up with 99% being unsustainable within a year?
Yeah, you start with small changes. Do small, sustainable things rather than having big visions you get too attached to. So this would be to maybe walk a little more than you currently do, watch a little less TV than you currently do, you know, and not to be too ambitious. And to bear in mind, this will be incremental.
What's wrong with watching TV? Well, is that a crime against humanity?
Well, I wouldn't describe TV as a crime against humanity. What you've done there is you've done a huge leap into a binary position whereby something is good or bad. So the position isn't that you watch 2 hours of TV every evening.
I'm watching Traitors at the moment, and I can't wait. I'm going to watch the darts tonight.
Okay, well, look, you know, I think you're in a category of your own here. We're going to talk more about regular functional human beings who watch 2 hours TV in the evening and might resolve to spend those 2 hours in the gym, a resolution that simply will not work. Instead, the resolution should be to watch TV for an hour and a half and use that other 30 minutes to go for a walk. So it's about making it doable, more sustainable. And remembering, this isn't like snakes and ladders. You don't get to 99 and then go down to zero. You know, if you fail one day, if you don't keep the resolution, hey, that's going to happen. You can always try again tomorrow.
And what about, like, there's a riverside walk in Enniscorthy. It's 3 kilometres out, beautiful, nice pathway beside the River Slane, and 3 kilometres back, and it takes me an hour and a half. But I have to reward myself by going for the pub for a couple of pints after that. Is it rewarding yourself a good concept?
Yeah, rewarding helps. Definitely getting that dopamine rush and linking it. Walking for 3 kilometres out and back, total of 6 kilometres, if I have that right, probably is a little bit undone in terms of physical health if it's followed by a large number of pints, depending on how many pints are involved.
Right.
The psychological
Happy
benefit...
Happy New Year to you too. Carry on. Yeah.
The psychological benefit might remain. But a reward, you know, it does need to be a real reward. It needs to be something you like, something you genuinely like. And if that thing is a pint, and if that encourages you to do the activity, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you're not going to totally change your personality. You're not going to reward yourself by looking at a beautiful view if that's not something that gives you the dopamine hit to reinforce the
behavior. Now, I'm wondering, with new year, new you, should I turn to Buddha? What do you think? You're an expert on Buddha.
Buddhism,
or Buddha, whatever. What would I have to do for that?
Well, the first thing is, there's no such thing as being an expert in Buddhism. And any Buddhist would tell you they are not a Buddhist.
You have a master's degree in it, don't you? In Buddha studies.
Sure, but that's different to being an expert in Buddhism. What Buddhism would say about all this carry-on is, firstly, that you start from where you are. Don't fantasize about your baseline or what you can achieve. And secondly, that change is constant. The Ivan that sat in this studio 1 year ago is different to the Ivan sitting here today. And so that is positive and negative. Change is always possible. We shouldn't grasp or cling too tightly to who we are today or who we want to be tomorrow. The unknowns will always be greater.
And you see, you've actually put your finger, rather surprisingly, on a key point here. That so I'm 65 now. Right. And I would have left school at 16, and my kind of modus operandi, my targets and goals in my 20s were different to the 30s, 40s, 50s, and now 60s. Can you give us advice on how to talk about life's journey in comparison to promises you might make yourself or aspirations in your younger self, your middle self, and your older self?
Well, you know, you need to live for today as much as is feasible and reasonable. The Ivan Yates that sits in front of me today is completely biologically different to the one that existed 20 or 40 years ago. And therefore, aspirations from the past have zero relevance unless they mean something to you today. We tend to cling on to the past as if we owe ourselves some kind of authentic sticking with what we believed in
the
past.
And what is that, physiological? What is that? Is that mental as well?
It's physiological, not quite mental, because there is a mental continuity. What the Buddhists called causal continuity. The Ivan that woke up this morning is pretty much similar to the one that fell asleep. I mean, if you woke up and you were someone completely different, that would be a huge surprise. So there is some continuity psychologically, but we change so much, it is meaningless to say that you are the same person that you were at 16. So your dreams and ambitions then are matters of historical interest only. You need to look at your ambitions now, what you want to be in this moment, and not get too attached to the future. You know, thinking about the past too much will make us depressed. Thinking about the future will make us anxious. So the more we can focus on today and now, the happier and more content we will be in ourselves.
So you're compatible. You're probably a lot older than me, but the point I'm trying to make is, what are your personal goals?
Ah.
Applying all this psychiatry, you know, I call it psychobabble, but it's very entertaining.
Thank you.
So tell me, what are your personal goals?
Well, I suppose right now my goal is to keep the psychobabble entertaining for you on the radio. But the idea of goals needs to be held lightly. You know, so much is going to change. I don't think we should stick too precisely to goals.
Go with the flow a little.
The management consultants tell us that our goals should be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-based and so on. I don't hold with that so much. I would look more to values. If you like, not having a map, but a compass, an idea of, you know, what values you want to embody over the coming years.
Don't tell me you're going to start moralising.
Maybe you could be a little kinder. Maybe you could listen a little bit more. Maybe you could respond a little bit more to other people. Just trying to embody these
values.
Be
empathetic.
Be a little more empathetic than you currently are, because undoubtedly there are areas in your life when you are empathetic and areas where you are possibly less so. And there is usually room for improvement. I'm not so crazy about specific numbered timelined targets. We're humans, you know, we're fuzzy at the edges. We need to focus on values.
How you say that, but I would say the biggest health game changer. I used to smoke 40 cigarettes a day. Mm. And on 6:15 on the 8th of August, 1988, I had my last cigarette, right? And I would say, above anything else I did, that was, like, and that required discipline. I had to go on the Nicorette. I found it really addictive, the nicotine and so on. But something like that, you've got to be hard-assed about it.
Yeah, I mean, saying you need to be more empathetic, you need to be kinder, you need more compassionate, that doesn't mean being soft. It doesn't mean being passive. It means these are very strong values if you stick with them. And what you did the day when you gave up cigarettes and every single day that you stayed off them, every time you resisted that temptation, you were being kind to yourself. You were being compassionate towards yourself, towards your physical body, towards your life. And compassion is a strong and sometimes difficult skill to build.
See, the way I did it was, however much, and you know, you'd be going through the roof in terms of, I must have a cigarette. However much I wanted the first one, I told myself, I want the second one even more. And so therefore, I said, you may as well cop yourself on.
Okay. So what you were doing there is you found a psychological mechanism to be kind to yourself, to be compassionate towards your physical well-being.
I don't know
well-being.
If I go with all this self-love business.
You really do seem to have a problem with the what you perceive as the softer emotions, such as self-love, compassion and empathy. And yet they are the strong ones that build our lives, our families and our societies.
I never met you, Professor Brendan Kelly, but you didn't have a book to plug. What's the latest?
I suppose the most recent book is called Resilience, Lessons from Sir William Wilde about life after COVID. And it's about what we learned or did not learn during the pandemic about ourselves
and about the world.
This resilience
is because we have a generation of snowflakes now. I mean, so tell me about what's the essence of resilience?
Well, I don't think we have a generation of snowflakes. We have a generation that is different to the previous one, as was always the case. And as is the case with someone who is 65 and in my case, significantly less than 65. It is our job to give out about the younger generation, but it has no basis in fact.
Now you've lost me there.
None whatsoever. But what the pandemic did
teach
us...
They're complete woke wusses. You couldn't send them to do anything. They just want to know how many days off. I mean, like, oh my God forbid they might have to work. They now want to take Fridays off and do a 4-day week. They want to work from home and do their Netflix and parenting. Don't get me started on the next generation.
Ivan, it's profoundly reassuring to hear you give out about the younger generation. You play your role and they play theirs, and they're challenging you in ways you didn't expect. What we learned about resilience during the pandemic is that we, and I include younger people, are more resilient than we thought. We dealt with what was a cataclysmic shift in our society during COVID. And while there was suffering and there was loss and some people still suffer, there was also great coping, great resilience. And that's what I talk about in the book, Resilience, Lessons from Sir William Wilde.
Resilience, Lessons from the... Right, you never let me down. Now, just two texts before I finish up with Brendan. Come on, Ivan, the concept of self-improvement is completely alien to you. You're a self-aggrandizing, what's in it for me merchant. Good man, keep it up and a happy new year. And someone else says, my New Year's resolution is to adopt the Ivan Yates philosophy of rewarding myself for effort. An hour of or so of walking or in the gym, followed by an hour in the pub. Don't confine yourself to the second hour. All right. So the moral of the story is to get realistic targets, to be almost incremental about it, and not set yourself up for a fall. Is that the essence of what you're saying?
Yes, maybe not so much with the targets, more with the kindness towards yourself and others, being firm and robustly compassionate as you make changes and remembering change will happen anyway. It's a matter of navigating it.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to meet and talk to Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin and so much more. Brendan Kelly, as always, thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.